ॐ भूर्भुवस्व तत्सवितुर्वरेण्यं भर्गो देवस्य धीमहि धियो यो न प्रचोदयात्। ॐ मे वी मेडिटेट ऑन दैट सुप्रीम बीइंग who dwells in the hearts of all. He is the source and sustenance of this universe. In Him we live, move and have our being. May He illumine our hearts and may He guide us in every way. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Peace. Peace, peace. We began the study of the Viveka Chudamani, a crest jewel of this good nation, by Shankaracharya. And we have seen and considered the different qualifications needed for a spiritual aspirant. And in that connection I explained to you that how if we become perfect in those qualifications, immediately there will dawn the knowledge of Brahman. And as I have oftentimes explained, religion means realizing God. And that God again is within what we call the Atman. The Atman is God dwelling within, and Brahman is a term to regard Brahman as the all-pervading existence. And Atman and Brahman are one and the same. And this knowledge we have to attain. In other words, ultimately it comes to this. The goal of life is to realize the Atman, the Self within. And you see, our whole world, each one's world, is centered around the Self. For instance, I want this or I want to know that. Each one's world is centered by that ego, centered in that ego. I. Nobody inquires except the spiritual aspirants. What is that I? And ultimately, whether you worship God outside, no matter how you worship God, whether you worship as Christ or Buddha, Ramakrishna, or formless absolute Brahman, however you may worship Him, ultimately you realize, I am Brahman. I am that. I am He. All the time He is within us. This is the final truth, the absolute truth. You may have visions and ecstasies and all kinds of experiences. They are wonderful. But they are all milestones on the path of progress. If we stop by having some ecstatic experience, wonderful, and we think we have it, then we do not grow anymore. My master used to say, light, more light, more light. And in this particular treatise, this great seer philosopher Shankara is goading us all the time to attain that supreme knowledge of the Atman. And he gives us certain qualifications which we have considered. And as I said, they are just ethical principles and also concentration and meditation upon God. The chosen ideal, personal, with form or without form, makes no difference. But if you become perfect in those, that means the revelation of the Atman as Brahman would come to you. But the main condition, as we have seen in the very first verse of this treatise, there are three conditions. Human birth, desire for God, desire for liberation. And if we have that desire for liberation, then again we have to meet a man of God who has attained that realization. It is something, it's an experience, something that is transmitted from guru to the disciple. Not to be had in books, not to be had in scriptures. What you may call the apostolic succession. And so the main point again, we have all human birth. But what is most needed then? Desire. Desire for liberation. Desire for God. And even if this desire is just mild, that is a great help. That is the beginning. And as you practice certain disciplines, as you practice concentration and meditation, and practice the spiritual, the ethical virtues, then this desire becomes intensified. And if this longing becomes intensified, then immediately that vision comes, that experience comes, revelation comes. Now let us see. Here in the last verse that we read was this. In other words, devotion. It can be defined as a search for the reality of one's own Atman. You know, in the scriptures on devotion, path of bhakti, it is defined as devotion to the supreme reality. But here he defines as devotion as the search for reality of one's own Atman. Because that God is with Atman, within one's own self. The seeker after the reality of the Atman, who possesses the above mentioned qualifications, should approach an illumined teacher from whom he can learn the way to liberation from all bondage. As I said, that desire, that longing is the most important part of it. And when does that longing come? When you begin to feel that you are in a bondage, that this life itself is a bondage. You see, as long as you are quite happy with what you have, so long the desire does not arise. But when you realize, to quote the words in the Imitation of Christ, vanity of vanities, all is vanity except to love God. You see, that is the longing, to feel that this ignorance is there. If you think you already know, then of course it's a stumbling block. And so that great longing has to come. But if it is a little, it grows. Now a teacher is one who is deeply versed in the scriptures, pure, free from lust, a perfect knower of Brahman. He is upheld continually in Brahman, calm like the flame when its fuel is consumed. An ocean of the love that knows no ulterior motive, a friend to all good people who humbly entrust themselves to him. These are the qualifications of a teacher. You see, this is not like teaching mathematics or teaching science or teaching history. It doesn't matter what the teacher is. But the teacher has to be pure, a free soul. And he must impart that knowledge without seeking for anything. There's no other ulterior motive but to help others. Let the seeker approach the master with reverent devotion. You see, that is also important. Then, when he has pleased him by his humility, love, and service, let him ask whatever may be known about the Atman. You see, you have to approach a teacher with humility. And with love and service, you have to please him. Then only the teaching becomes effective. O Master, you see, here he is giving an example how the disciple feels as he approaches the Master. O Master, friend of all devotees, I bow down before you. O boundless compassion, I have fallen into the sea of the world. Save me with those steadfast eyes which shed grace like nectar, never ending. This is a most beautiful truth also. You see, I remember M, the writer of the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, asked a young boy when he went to visit Holy Mother, did you watch her looking at you with her graceful eyes? Yes. You see, that, it descends the grace as it were. I am burning in the blaze of the world forest which no man can extinguish. You have to feel that burning, you know. Evil deeds out of the past drive me like huge winds hither and thither. I am full of fear. I have taken refuge in you. Save me from death. I know no other shelter. There are pure souls who have attained peace and greatness. They bring good to mankind like the coming of spring. They themselves have crossed the dreadful ocean of this world. Without any selfish motive, they help others to cross. It is the very nature of these great souls to work of their own accord, to cure the troubles of others, just as the moon of its own accord cools the earth when it is scorched by the fierce rays of the sun. The vessel of your lips has been dipped in and filled with the sweetness of the bliss of Brahman. Pour words from it like drops of nectar upon me. They are purifying, soothing and delightful to the ear. Master, I am consumed by the scorching heat of this worldly life as by the flames of a forest fire. Blessed are they on whom your eye rests even for a moment. It is thus that you accept them and make them your own. How shall I cross the ocean of this world? What should be my goal? What way should I take? I know of none. You see, if you come knowing too much, poor teacher can't help you, you see. I know of none. Be gracious, Master. Save me. Tell me how to end the miseries of this earthly life, withhold nothing. Scorched by the fierce flames of the world, the disciple speaks these words. The great soul looks at the disciple who thus seeks refuge in him, and his eyes are wet with tears of mercy. Immediately he frees the disciple from his fear. That's the one thing. To sit at the feet of a teacher is to make feel free from all fear. You see, we used to feel as if the realization of Brahman is a simple, easy thing, just like the fruit in the palm of your own hand. You'd make us feel that. This disciple who has sought his protection is one who thirsts for liberation, who has properly fulfilled his duties, whose heart has become tranquil and who has attained calmness of mind. The wise and holy man, out of compassion, begins to instruct him in the truth. Now begins the instruction. O prudent one, do not fear. For you there is no danger. You see, as long as that desire has arisen, and you desire to know the truth of God, there is no fear for you. There is a way to cross the ocean of worldly life. I shall reveal to you that very method by which sages have reached the other shore. Now here again, just mark these words. There is no new road, no new path. Sages have traveled that path and have attained that knowledge, have crossed the ocean of world. And so that path, of course there is not one path again, there are many paths, which have been traded by many sages. And we have to know one such path. You know, those who say, oh, you don't have to learn from any scripture or from any book or from any teacher. Just be yourself, you know. Talks like that sound very good. And it doesn't help. When one great sage was asked, what is the way? And his answer was, path trodden by sages of the past. So here the teacher says, I shall reveal to you. He doesn't say that I have a method of my own, you see. Do such and such breathing exercise and all that business, you know, and then as if the Brahman will be so afraid of you that he will just come down to you like anything. I shall reveal to you that very method by which sages have reached the other end. There is a certain potent method of putting an end to the horror of this worldly life. By it, you may cross the world ocean and reach the highest bliss. Meditation on the meaning of the truth as it is taught in Vedanta leads to the highest illumination. You see, take for instance that truth, that thou art. Meditation on that truth itself leads to the highest realization of Brahman. By this, by this means, the misery of worldly life is altogether destroyed. Faith, devotion, and constant union with God through prayer. These are declared by the sacred scriptures to be the seeker's direct means of liberation. To him who abides by them comes liberation from that bondage of physical consciousness which has been forged by ignorance. Here he points out these three things. Faith. Now what is faith? That has been defined as faith in the words of the scriptures and in the words of the teacher. You see, you have to have that faith that others have attained God and I can also attain Him. You see, this faith you must have. And this is explained in the scriptures. There are exemplars in the scriptures mentioned, and the teacher also is an exemplar. So faith in the words of the scriptures and in the words of the teacher. And devotion. Devotion is that search for reality, reality of the Atman. And constant union with God through prayer. There is constant union with the Atman through prayer. For instance, as I said, that thou art. That search for thou and that as one. And to fix your mind upon Atman. You see, that is the way. Faith, devotion, and constant union with God through prayer. These are declared by the sacred scriptures to be the seeker's direct means of liberation. To him who abides by them comes liberation from that bondage of physical consciousness which has been forced by ignorance. You see, this physical consciousness, you see, that I am this body. See, I am this mind, or senses, or sense organs, identifying myself with these. That is the ignorance, forced by ignorance. And when we become freed from these identifications and realize the Atman, as self, we become liberated. This reminds me, a disciple of Sri Ramakrishna once told me, that he feels that the Atman is completely separate from this body. He feels that it's just like a ripe coconut. You can shake and inside meat has become separated from the shell. Because you are associated with ignorance, the Supreme Atman within you appears to be in bondage to the non-Atman. This is the sole cause of the cycle of births and deaths. The flame of illumination, which is kindled by discrimination between Atman and non-Atman, will burn away the effects of ignorance down to their very roots. You see, because of that ignorance, because we are identifying ourselves with the mind, senses, body, ego, we are subject to the karmas. Now, in this connection, let me explain to you about this freedom from karma, that is liberation, how it can be achieved. You see, the karma attaches to us, and we are bound by our karmas. As long as there is the sense, I am the doer. But when the knowledge of the Atman comes, then you realize that Atman is not the doer. I am not the doer. So whatever karmas may have been performed by you, good or bad, doesn't matter. You become free the moment you know the Atman as Atman. No more any karma can attach to you. But as long as we are identifying ourselves with the ego, senses, body, mind, I act with my mind, I act with my body, you see, and then I feel I am the doer. So long we are bound by the karma, and as such we are subject to rebirth, reincarnation or rebirth. This belongs to the realm of ignorance, as long as we are in ignorance. When we free ourselves, when we realize we are the Atman, there is no more birth or death, we have conquered death. Then, if somebody wants to come, he can come knowingly, consciously, he can come back to help mankind. The flame of illumination, which is kindled by discrimination between Atman and non-Atman, will burn away the effects of ignorance down to their very roots. The disciple speaks, "Master, please listen to the questions I am about to ask. I shall feel blessed if I may hear an answer from your lips. What in reality is this bondage? How did it begin? In what is it rooted? How is a man set free from it? What is the non-Atman? What is the Supreme Atman? How can one discriminate between them? Please answer me." The Master speaks, "You are blessed indeed." You see, when the Master finds right kind of questions, you see, that is practical. What is practical? What would help you? Then of course he is pleased. So he says, "You are blessed indeed. You are drawing near to the goal. Through you, your whole family have become purified, because you long to get free from the bondage of ignorance and reach Brahman." Think of that. If one in the family seeks or longs for the truth of God, the whole family becomes purified. Just think. If one longs for it even, the whole family becomes purified. In fact, they say, in another scripture it says, that 7 generations above and 7 generations below become liberated without doing anything. One in the family. Through you, your whole family have become purified, because you long to get free from the bondage of ignorance and reach Brahman. Children may free their father from his debts, but no other person can free a man from his bondage. He must do it himself. Others may relieve the suffering caused by burden that weighs upon the head, but the suffering which comes from hunger and the like can only be relieved by oneself. Now here again, he is urging the disciple to reach that truth, to realize that truth himself. So he says, others may relieve the suffering caused by burden that weighs upon the head. He can take away that burden and free you from that suffering. But the suffering which comes from hunger and the like can only be relieved by oneself. If somebody eats for you, that doesn't relieve your suffering. So in this case, you have to realize the truth of God yourself. The sick man who takes medicine and follows the rules of diet is seen to be restored to health, but not through the efforts of another. If another diets for you, you won't get any benefit. a clear vision of the reality may be obtained only through our own eyes when they have been opened by spiritual insight, never through the eyes of some other seer. Through our own eyes we learn what the moon looks like. How could we learn this through the eyes of others? See, in other words, as I have often and all the time insisted expressed persistently, and that is that we have to realize the truth ourselves. Christ attained Christhood, Buddha attained Buddhahood, or Ramakrishna had the vision of God and union with God. Simply believing that doesn't help me. I must achieve that for myself. Here are two questions written down, and then of course I'd like you also to ask questions.
The oral questions from the audience are being revoiced due to their being off mic during the original recording.
How can we best practice surrender and do it without any ego? Now, you see, now the question is not just right, because we have to have the ego to surrender. Without an ego, what would you surrender? It is your ego that you have to surrender. And what is the way to surrender? To keep our mind fixed on Brahman, fixed on God. See, that is the way. And as you keep your mind in God, feel His presence and say, I take refuge in you. Help me, guide me, give me devotion, give me understanding, give me knowledge. Pray for devotion, pray for knowledge. That is how we surrender ourselves. But of course, it's a continued process. You do not achieve in one day or in a few moments. But that surrender has to come gradually. And here again, Sri Ramakrishna used to say, you know, he taught this prayer. I am the instrument. Thou art the operator. I am the instrument. I am the machine. Thou art the operator. You do what you please, I am only the instrument. In other words, try to feel that you are not the doer. And if you can feel that and practice that, that brings liberation. As I pointed out, it is the sense of ego, I am the doer, that causes bondages to karma, good or bad. You see, good karmas also are bondages. But we have to be freed from the effects of good and bad karmas both by realizing every moment, I am not the doer. Swami, please, is consciousness the same as awareness? To be aware of every action, thought and speech. Please explain in other words what consciousness really is. Now, that's a question, very interesting, but it's impossible to answer. You see, you are aware or you are conscious of something, of your act, of your thought. So, that is not the pure consciousness. That is not what is known as consciousness itself. You are conscious of objects and things, as you say, to be aware of every action, thought and speech. All right, that you do. What does it matter? Nothing happens. But let me give you try to explain to you. You see, consciousness is the light through the power of which we know our actions, we see things and objects. But this light of consciousness remains on the background. We don't know what it is. And all this struggle, you see, Atman is consciousness itself. It is through the light of the Atman that I am conscious of objects and things. I know this and I know that. But that which is on the back, the Atman, whose light I am using, I don't know. And all this struggle is to know that Atman, pure consciousness. Then there is no action, no thought. So can you imagine? We cannot imagine with our consciousness, with our mind. You see, we are thinking with our mind, and mind is reflecting that consciousness. It's not consciousness itself. Mind is reflecting that consciousness, and through that reflection, senses become active. And we know. We see. We act. But the consciousness remains unknown. And we have to reach beyond, transcend the senses. No, there is no action, no thought there. You see, that's what we call samadhi. Then you know pure consciousness. Here is another way to explain it. When you are in deep sleep, you are not conscious of objects and things. You are unconscious, apparently. But still there is consciousness. Only you are not aware of that consciousness. Why I say there is consciousness? When you wake up, you see the continuity of the identity. Now, samadhi, to know that pure consciousness, you go into deep sleep, but fully conscious. Can you imagine anything like that? And that is samadhi. And that's what Swamiji again explained, the difference between sleep and samadhi. He says, a fool goes to sleep and he comes out a fool. But a fool goes into samadhi, he comes out a wise man. Now, of course, if you say, how can a fool go into samadhi? Yes. Until we go into samadhi, we are fools. That's the fact. Believe it or not. Now, ask some questions. I just had these two. They were very interesting, both of them.
Swami, you say that the Atman does not act. There must be a difference between the actions we do as an instrument and the actions of the ego?
You see, Atman doesn't act. It is the power of the Atman that makes me move my hand. In other words, without that power of God, power of Atman is the power of God, I couldn't live, I couldn't breathe. But we have usurped that power. And the ego has usurped that. You see? So ego is acting. Ego is doing. But if you can give up that ego and say, I am not the actor. I am the instrument. The ego falls away. And that is a way to purify our heart. And through such purification, we attain the knowledge of Atman when we become actionless. In samadhi, there is no action, no thought.
On the surface, the actions probably look much the same.
Oh, yes, yes. You see, Christ is working, and you and I also are working, but there's a big difference. His consciousness and our consciousness are different until we attain Christhood. Apparently, there's no difference. You see, you cannot recognize a holy man. You cannot recognize an illumined teacher. Just consider Christ lived on earth. How many recognized him? Millions worship Christ today. But when he was living, how many recognized him? See, multitudes followed him, then they gave him up. And just these few 12 disciples went and surrounded him. And he said, "Are ye also going to leave me?" And then it was Peter who said, "No, Master, because you have the words of eternal life." The others were seeking miracles, health, healing, all that they were seeking. And they left him. So how many recognized?
Does a person who attains samadhi know the total substance of God?
Yes, samadhi means the knowledge of the total substance of God.
Would an answer from two different people who have attained the highest be identical?
No. When they go to express, they cannot express identically. Truth is one, sages call by various names.
When the self and the ego have become separated, who does the observing?
You see, the ego, if you analyze, it has no existence at all in the first place. It's not separated. Ego and Atman are not separated in knowledge. But ego is a shadow. It is no reality. Just try to consider, what are you? Are you this body? Changing all the time. You are not the same. Are you the mind? It is changing. Everything that you consider yourself to be you, all the time just in a flux. It has no existence at all. As the illustration can be given, you take the onion, for instance, and try to find out what is inside that onion, and you peel one layer after another, and then you find there's nothing, empty space. You see, there is that illustration in the Upanishads. Two birds of beautiful plumage sitting on the same tree. The upper bird sitting on the upper branch is calm, majestic in its own glory. The lower bird, hopping from one branch to another, eating the sweet and bitter fruits of the tree. When it tastes some bitter fruit, it looks at the upper bird, sees that bird calm and majestic, approaches nearer, again forgets, goes on eating sweet and bitter fruits, until it has eaten a very bitter fruit, and then goes nearer and nearer. And then, lo and behold, there was just that upper bird, its shadow was playing all the time. Om Hari Om Sahana Bhavato Sahana Bhunakto Sahavirjam Karavavahai Tejasinavatitamastu Mavidvishabhai. Om. May Brahman protect us. May he guide us. May he give us strength and right understanding. May we have love for all. May our study bring light unto us. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Peace, peace.